companies this morning, Honorable Swartz, on the expansions and the deviations. So I think we'll start with expansions, and then we'll go to the deviations.
Recording in progress.
I am advised, I received this morning a list of the delegation, which is the confirmed DPE and ESCOM. The minister is at the President's Social Compact meeting, which is taking place now. And so the delegation is from the DPE side is led by the Deputy Minister and the DG and the DDG. And on the ESCOM side, excuse me, it is the board chairperson, Prof, and three other board members. And then there's the executives, so I think we'll start in that way. COO, CFO, I don't see the CEO there. So we'll hand over to you, Deputy Minister. And then we will go to the chairperson of the of the board, and then Mam Dulasha will be in your hands once that is done. So this, as I'm saying, is a continuation meeting of the hearing that we had on the expansion in the in quarter one, the expansions were 879 million, quarter two, 9 billion. And if you go to the the deviations, a similar scenario really of escalating numbers. So it exists where in 2020 and 2021 it was 11 irregular expenditure rather in was like at 11.6 billion and at the end to the 37 billion structure. But to the allocated colleagues below, we will not go through it. Members will. May I therefore hand over to the Deputy Minister Board, Professor. Colleagues, good morning, and I'd like to thank Honorable Swartz for stepping in. There was an urgent matter which Honorable Mentor had to test to deal with. All right. DM, good morning, and over to you, colleagues. Welcome.
Our apologies, Chair. It looks like the DM is still not connected. I'm not sure why, but I'll try check on the site. Maybe if we can proceed. Chair. Good morning, Chair.
Good morning, Chair. Board Chairperson?
Yes.
You have anything to say?
Let's go to the Chair of the Board. Thank you very much. I'll keep my camera off. And then thanks, Obusama. I appreciate that intervention. Chair of the board, let's go to you in the absence of the DM.
Thank you, Chair and honorable members. And as you have indicated appropriately, this is a continuation of a meeting we have had towards the end of last year. But more importantly is to say to all honorable members, a happy 2022. We hope that I think it will bring good progress and good news to all of us. The first thing I wanted to alert the committee is that under the Rater, the GCE is abroad on business, so he will not be attending this meeting. And in his place, Mr. Caleb Kasim, the Chief Financial Officer, will lead the presentation of this session and of this meeting. And really all I wanted to say is that I think we have started the year on a good note and things are looking good at ESCOM. We are obviously looking forward, I think, to the state capture report that should be coming out today. We have been preparing ourselves, I think, in order to tackle this. But I think the business of the day today is to deal with the deviations and expansions that have been outstanding since last year. And I want to hand over to Caleb Kasim to make the necessary introductions and start the presentation. We have reduced the number of slides to 50. Hopefully, we have only reduced the quantity and not the quality of the information in there. And we hope to complete, I think, this phase of the meeting in terms of this agenda. Thank you again, honorable members and the chair. Caleb?
Good morning, honorable chairperson, honorable members, deputy minister and colleagues. Honorable chairperson, will you give us the direction from SCOPA on how to proceed around the expansions, please? Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, chairperson and CFO. I find this very difficult, right? Minister's not here. I'm not sure if the PM is logged in. The CEO is not here. And these things are always sprung on us at the last minute. And I honestly speaking, I don't know how, in fact, I don't know what more and what else one is expected to say to ESCOM. I actually just don't know now. Maybe I'm being pedantic. Ma'am Tolasha, over to you.
Good morning, Chairperson. Thank you for the opportunity. Good morning, colleagues, Deputy Minister, and the team. Good morning. Thank you for a very well wishes from the chair of the board of ESCOM. Chair, I have the same concern like you have just articulated. Already the CFO, when he opened his mouth, he made mention of the fact that these matters that we have to deal with today were the matters that we were busy dealing with them last year already. And we parted ways because there were answers that were not satisfactory. And today we are being informed that the CEO is not here. In fact, the CFO, the actual person who has implemented all this that you are going to deal with, is supposed to give us answers. I don't think this is fair, Chair. Why is that ESCOM full of drama? Why every time when we were to deal with ESCOM, there will be a drama? Why is we expected to deal with the work before us when billions have been misdirected? And when we had to engage with that, they are once again stories. Because ESCOM likes to play victim so that they run away from accounting because they will be seen as this one that is not being liked in the family. I don't think, Chair, this is acceptable. I don't think it's acceptable. Unless you say, Chair, you receive the apology that the CEO will not be here, I guess you could have rearranged the meeting because I don't see the reason why you should be listening to the CFO, the same person who made this that we are dealing with. Chair, I have a strong feeling that we are not being taken seriously by ESCOM, unfortunately, Chairperson. We are seriously being disrespected here because this meeting was known last year already. And if that communication could have come before today to your office, Honorable Chairperson, I guess you could have rearranged because these that we are dealing with are billions of taxpayers' money that are not properly accounted for. I don't think this is acceptable, Honorable Chairperson. I think let's deal with the matter before we get to the presentation. The fact that the CEO is not here. Don't underestimate the business to the taxpayer on the amount of money that are sometimes being used in an appropriate manner. So I really want us to deal with the fact that the CEO is not. Yeah. And the fact that you received this apology before today to your office, because from where I'm seated, you could have rearranged this meeting because we need the CEO, the accounting officer, to come and account, Chair. The practice, so he has come and account before us and before the taxpayer. So, Chair, I say that you are really overwhelmed, but I think let's deal with the matter that the CEO is not here on a meeting that was known long ago and dealing with the matters that need the accounting officer in particular. I rest my case, Chair. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Ma'am Tolasha. And colleagues, if you will pardon me, I'm going to have to keep my camera off. The network is a bit problematic on my end. Yes, Ma'am Tolasha, I received a list of attendees via email this morning at 9:24. This morning at 9:24. It indicated the apology of the minister. I have not received an apology from the CEO. Suffice to say what the chairperson of the board has said in his opening remarks this morning. So I just put that's what I have on my end. All right. So yeah, I thought you would want that explanation from me. The email came well to me at the very least at 9:24 this morning. 6 minutes before the meeting started. All right, colleagues, let's make a determination about how we proceed with this because time is, there's so much to get through. Like they've said, the slide is 51 pages, the presentation, and we're not going through the presentation. In the event that we proceed, because we just want to shoot straight to questions, we've read the presentation, take it as read. Antilash, I see your hand is up again. System, you will assist. I'm using a smaller gadget now in the event that there's other hands.
No, thank you very much, Chair, for the explanation. And that also raises a serious question that you receive list of attendees at almost 9:30 when the meeting was about to start. I think the chairperson of the board must also take responsibility of this as the overall overseer of ESCOM. Chair, I know and accept the fact that we are under serious pressure in dealing with these matters. Indeed, we took longer than anticipated. But I think it must be registered here and now, Chair, that ESCOM does not take Parliament seriously. Does not take Parliament seriously for reasons best known by themselves, Chair. I don't know, Chair, if the chairperson of the board can get to know only this morning, 4 minutes before the actual time, starting time of the meeting, that the most important people for the meeting are not going to attend. I'm not sure how the honorable chairperson of the board would take that. Maybe we are be seen as a person who's overreacting, but I just want to know from him, how would he really take the fact that when a meeting has been pre-arranged, then apologies come 4 minutes before the actual meeting. Hey, I think much as we are in a hurry to conclude this matter, but we should really note the disrespect that is being demonstrated here. And maybe with time, we'll get to know the reasons. And if we can't get the reasons, we must find a way to make sure that the minister comes to come and tell us whether we are still the right person or right team to deal with ESCOM. Our responsibility is not given by them anyway, but the taxpayers have given us this responsibility. ESCOM seems to disrespect everybody, with due respect, because this is how I feel with what you have just informed us and the fact that we had to do our job. But I think I must register our dissatisfaction with what the ESCOM is always doing to ourselves, chairperson, because ESCOM likes to play victim. It's now a norm, so that everybody see ESCOM a victim. And at the same time, ESCOM gets away with accounting processes, which is their sole responsibility insofar as the laws that govern this country are concerned. I don't think it's acceptable, Chair. Please forgive me to have been expressed myself this way, but I think I am in my right position as part of your committee, Chair. Thank you very much.
No, don't apologize, Madam Polasha.
Can
just 1 second, Prof. Can I get Babu Swami? I saw your hand. And then Prof will come to you. Okay.
Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Chair, and good morning to the Chair of the Board, the Deputy Minister who has connected, and other members who are currently present. I think the Mamutolasha's expression covers our disappointment. At least would have been fair to us that would have found some form of a track to postpone the meeting if indeed the accounting officer of ESCOM has a challenge to be part of the meeting. I'm trying to be a bit mild, you see, and the fact that no apology from that office that has reached the office of the chair, it remains that there is absolutely no apology. And I really don't think that we must take that lightly, without as well denigrating the actual attendance to the matters which are primarily the life to ESCOM. I would really love to hear from the chair what has now happened. What is it that has caused this kind of dealing and some form of failure of communication? Because that's an angle which one would want to take. In anticipation thereof, would have to deal with the fact that we have a planned oversight to ESCOM. which is going to take place, and therefore times to deal with these critical matters with the absence of the accounting officer. It becomes problematic, and we might want to link this kind of a session probably with that a visit which you're going to pay to ESCOM sometime, you see, this year, this quarter, to finalize these matters. Thank you, Chair.
All right, thank you very much, Babuswami. Honorable Van Meenen.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, I am rather confused because you've already said that we've got the presentation, which we do, and that it's noted as read. But I just want to note for the record that, in fact, at 8:01 on Friday morning, that was the 25th of February, I received an email addressed to all of us at SCOPA, in which it has the attached ESCOM presentation. And that came from an email received on Thursday evening at 6:23, in which we have the presentation from ESCOM and the letter from ESCOM noting Ms. Andrea de Reiter will not be in attendance, et cetera, due to international travel and engagements. So the fact is that the entire committee was informed on Friday morning of this. So I don't know why members are now saying that they don't know about it. And I'm also rather concerned that if I look at the last two times that ESCOM appeared in front of SCOPA, there have been certain members of the committee who have essentially tried to disrupt meetings and not allowed us to continue with some of our oversight. So I'm very concerned that this is becoming a pattern, and I'm appealing to you as the chair to please deal with this matter. Thank you.
No, I note what Honorable Van Meenen is saying. I think that I hear it, but as I'm saying, I have received no correspondence to me or to the committee about the apology of the CEO. I don't have it. Any other correspondence or things that they write between themselves, that's their own things. Seated here, I've got no letter, and I must say, I always take the professional courtesy to send formal letters to all entities and departments and persons of authority and persons of office. And seemingly it is okay for people to think that they can respond with WhatsApp messages, SMSs, So I note the concern that you have, and it's anchored in a I just feel that there has to be an improvement in how ESCOM and DPE communicate to us. But seated here, I don't have a letter from ESCOM telling me or the committee that the CEO is not there. I received a, what I did have sent to me was at 9:24 this morning, the list of attendees. So that's where that matter is. And it's an old age problem of the communication protocols between us and ESCOM. So colleagues, As I said, the presentation is taken as read. The board is here, which is the accounting authority of the board. And Lebo, I have noted the message that you have sent. I will respond to it. So, all right, colleagues, I'm going to appeal as follows, because we are going to ESCOM at the end of the month as soon as we get the approval from the presiding officers. That because the board is here and the COO and the CFO are present, that we proceed. And if there are matters which we do not receive satisfactory responses, we will flag those and continue with those matters when we meet with ESCOM at the end of the month. And I do so reluctantly, actually. I make that request very reluctantly, because it's a pattern that there always has to be a trailer of sorts, a dramatic preamble to our start to meetings with ESCOM. And it's that it is not to do the right things the right way. If I take the common professional courtesy to write to you on a formal parliamentary letterhead and I append my signature at the end, it is equally common professional courtesy, at the very least, to do the same. And it just must just be understood that we are a committee of parliament. We are not a street committee somewhere, in which is just, and we just informally constitute ourselves there as an ad hoc structure. So we represent the House, we are arm of the state. So I don't think those basic elementaries are really a discussion which we should be having, and a corporate such as ESCOM. It's just basic professional courtesy 101. That's what it is. So I don't want to debate the semantics, and the bottom line is ESCOM and DPA just need to do better. I'm going to hand over to the chair of the board, and then, Mam Dolash, I'm going to request you that we proceed. The term of the term is very short, and every day counts and every minute counts. So I'm going to request that you proceed. The chair of the board and the executives and the three other board members who are present will field the questions. So chair of the board, I'll hand over to you, and then Mam Dolash, you'll be off the bat, and then we will start off with extensions, and then Honorable Swartz, you will take us through deviations. Chair?
Thank you, Chair, and Honorable Members. Again, I want to profusely apologize to all of you. I have followed protocol in this matter. I have written to the Minister of DPE, indicating the apology that has been recorded somewhere. So I have followed the protocol that I think I've been advised in order to, I think, to be honorable in dealing with this committee and showing respect. And the letter to that effect is on record. It's obviously the usual communication problems, but it is not out of disrespect that we are in this situation. I think the proper protocols have been followed. They may not have reached, I think, you, the chair, and the committee in time, but nevertheless, they have been done. I think the ESCOM team is here, is properly constituted, except as I say, for the apology. And again, I understand, I think, the sentiments of members of this committee. I do not, and I don't think the board of ESCOM or anybody disrespects you, as far as I can read from the situation. But I entirely agree with you that we should try and deal with these issues today, and whatever we cannot resolve maybe will be handled during the visit that you are planning, and hopefully communications will be a little bit better than what we have today. But just to place it on record, a letter has been sent to the minister to record, I think, Andre's apology long before this meeting. How it has not gotten back to the committee, it's something that I cannot account for at the moment. Thank you, Chair.
I think, Chair, when we meet on the oversight visit, I think let us iron out this communication headache, because it has been settled with us now for the longest of time. Yeah. And I reiterate that one thing won't compromise on is on protecting the collective integrity and seriousness of this committee. I just think it's something one can't relent on. So I think we'll flag this matter of communication for our oversight visit with ESCOM, because we've been down this road before, where there is a conveyor belt of sorts, or toll gates or e-tolls of things in so far as getting communication and things to us. All right, Mtolashe, I'm going to request you that we start off with expansions, your reservations notwithstanding, and let's see how far we go. So we're going to start off with expansions, colleagues. So CFO, for purposes of time management, we will not present the presentation, but at every material point of a question, you will take us to the relevant slides so that we manage our time. The House is also sitting at 1400 hours this afternoon. Right, Mam Dola, over to you.
Thank you for clarifying everything else that makes us to feel the way we're feeling. However, you make mention of the fact that you did not receive the letter, and that's where we are all coming from. Chair, if we can remember a little bit, Chair, that ESCOM was amongst the top 20 applications for expansion in Q1 of 2021-2022. With the highest number of applications. The rent value of those applications during this period of the 24 applications. Four applications with a value of 6 million. I mean 6.7. Say the application with a value of 11.7 billion. They were conditionally supported, and five applications with a value of 1.3 billion for nothing. In the analysis, Honorable Chairperson, in quarter two, ESCOM made six applications for expansion. The total value was minus eight. These four applications were totaling 859.5 million. They were conditionally supported by the National Treasurer. The two applications totaled 6 million. They were not checked. If I may, Honorable Chairperson, I would want to make mention of the date of the 26th of December, 2021. The company supplier by the name of Amot Esh, their contract extension purchase and collection of fly ash from Amot. This change was not supported. However, in the presentation submitted to ESCOM, to SCOPA by ESCOM, it says these applications were supported by National Treasurer on the 25th of November, 2021, from 5 to 10 years. I guess, Chair, in that we need more explanation. Again, Chair, on the 26th of the 7th month, a company by the name of Metrofi, provision of document storage and concert makers. This, again, Chair, was not supported by the National Treasurer. In fact, it was declared by auditors and ESCOM was required to take action against the responsible officials. It was declared irregular, Chair, by the AG. Chair, there are a list of companies or transactions that were conditionally supported, which there are four of those. They are KFA Saudi and TMS Group. Their role is supplying transportation, erection, and dismantling of scaffolding and insulation material. They were conditionally supported by the National Treasurer. The extension for 3 months ending on the 31st of October 2021. Again, the terror services, Chair, the provision of a heritage specialist for examination and rescue of heritage resources. They were also conditionally supported by the National Treasurer. This expansion was supported on condition that the costs are independently assessed and evidence be submitted to the National Treasurer. We want to hear from ESCOM whether that was done in fact. Again, Chair, on the 16th of the 8th month, 2021, the company by the name of ENS Incorporated, also it's a legal service, requested to review the current task of ENS to include the application brought by ESCOM against Econ Oil. This was conditionally supported again. No, it was approved on the condition that it is cost effective for ESCOM to use this service provider. We'd want to hear more whether that is the case. The last one, Chair. On the 5th of the 8th month, 2021, a company by the name of Honeywell Automation and Control Solutions South Africa, the expansion request for the Medupi Consolidated Building Management System. This was also approved, the extension of this contract for 6 months from October 2021 until March 2022. We want to hear whether that is the case. Chair, on all these transactions that I've made mention of, we would want to hear, especially on the company by the name of Metrofine. This contract was declared irregular by the auditors. That's the case, Chair. ESCOM was requested to take disciplinary actions against responsible officials. In their submission to the committee, ESCOM had indicated that the responsible employees had resigned. Just want to hear, when did the employee resign? And what other actions does ESCOM intend to take? ESCOM also needs to set a tone, Chair, for even other employees, that even if they resign, if there are allegations of wrongdoing, then they decide to resign. There will be follow up the case until the financial loss is recovered. We want to emphasize that. On the terror or zero services, Chair, this extension was supported by National Treasurer on the condition that the costs are independently assessed and the evidence of this assessment be submitted to the National Treasurer. We want to hear from ESCOM whether this did in fact happen. Chair, I will end there insofar as this matter is concerned to get to hear more from ESCOM. Thank you very much.
Okay, and thank you much, Mam Tolasha. You've raised, I think, about four or five there. ESCOM can go through them seriatim, and then we will field the question. Chairman, thank you. If Natasha can put up our presentation, please. Thank you, Chair. I got most of it, but it was breaking up. I've got Arnold Fly Ash, Honeywell, Metrofile, Kiefer Scaffolding, the Heritage Site, and ENS. Chair, we'll go to those. If there's any we missed, you will guide us. If we can start, Natasha, with... I think we can start with the Honeywell presentation and give feedback on that, and we'll cover the others. Honorable Chairperson,
Becky Nomalo will take us through the Honeywell transaction and that expansion that was not supported. Thank you, Becky. Over to you. Thanks.
Hey, thank you, Caleb. Thank you. Good morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. On the Honeywell submission that we submitted to NT, they have supported it on Q2 on November with those conditions, Chair. Chair, I would like to indicate that on November 9, we did submit to National Treasury the documents that they've requested from us in terms of this contract and also how we're going to deal with what they've requested. And as such, Chair, I can confirm that last week I was on site. I've met with the senior management of Honeywell. Indeed, they are finalizing this work for the end of this month, Chair. So everything is in place as per the approval that we have received, Chair. Thank you.
Natasha, if we can go to the Metro file one, please. Or we can do the ash. Let's do the ash. We can stop here. Fly ash is, and who's talking to the fly ash? That's now. Vicky, is this you?
Hi, Chair. It's Stephen Howe. Talk to the fly
ash. Okay. Go for it, Stephen.
Yep. Chair, honorable members, thanks very much. In terms of the fly ash contract, the contract was placed for a five-year period, and there was a request from the contractor that in order to get a return on his capital that he had put into the plant, he would need the contract to be extended to 10 years. The application was made on the 21st of August for this extension, and in fact, we do have on record that it was supported on the 25th of November. The honourable member made comment that it had not been supported, but in fact, it has been supported, and we consider the matter closed. Yeah, thank you, Chair.
Thanks for that, Stephen. Natasha, let's move to the next one. Let's see. Okay, let's deal with Kifa. If Philip can talk to this on. The dismantling and the scaffolding. This was another item that was requested. Over to you.
Questions on those. So Eskom, I'm over to you.
So just 1 second. Just go back to that last slide that you had on. The one that you just spoke to now, Eskom Redcheck Industries. Okay, we'll come back to that. All right, Pan, proceed.
Thanks, Philip. You can do Kifa and the scaffolding.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, honorable members. So, Chair, this was also conditionally supported by National Treasury, and the conditions were fully met. The contract came to an end at the end of December. And we've subsequently placed a new contract which commenced on the 1st of January 2022. So National Treasury had some conditions that were stipulated, and those conditions were met, Chair. Thanks.
Tasha, we can do the heritage one. Yeah, Sekomotsu, if you can do this, please. Sekhomotso, you're mute. Okay, I suggest we proceed to the Metro file until we get Sekhomotso back. Let's do the Metro file one, Natasha.
Chair, thanks very much. Honourable members, hello again. Due to the fact that this issue goes back to 2017, and to get the correct corporate memory, I'm going to ask Lunga Majuli, who's head of our procurement, to take us through it. Thank you. Over to you.
CFO, this is precisely why Eskom hearings are frustrating. I don't know how many people have spoken now. And I would really implore you that moving forward, leader of delegation must be au fait with all the issues. We are toing and froing between too many people. It makes for an incoherent hearing. And I've raised this before. Proceed.
Thank you, Chair. Apologies. Can we go speak quickly?
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, honorable members. I'm just going to talk to this issue of the expansion on Metro 5. The condemnation that we submitted in July was not supported. The main reasons there were that the condemnation itself did not indicate the consequence management thereof. So what we have done since then was to put together a determination report to indicate the people that were party to this transaction. Two people have since resigned, and one person has passed on. So we are in the process of putting together a new submission to the committee indicating the status, because it is emanated from this being submitted as a sole source instead of it being a single source. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks. And then our last one on the ENS ones, in terms of that modification.
My apologies, Chair. I couldn't hear the gentleman on his explanation. I last heard him saying the other one passed on and something. I just want to hear, as according to the question, the consequence management, I want to hear exactly that. You really did not hear my apologies.
No, that's fine.
Okay. Apologies, honorable member. I'll try to raise my voice. I was indicating that the reasons why the submission was not approved at the time around July is because the committee indicated that on the condemnation itself, there was no indication of consequence management. So what we have done since then was to do our determination report internally. And in that determination report, we indicated the number of people that participated in that transaction or in that transaction. And two people out of the people that were party to the transaction have resigned. One resigned in 2020, the other one resigned in 2017. So the one person that was party to the transaction as well had passed on. So following that determination report that we had, we are putting together a submission that will indicate all these issues that we've just indicated to the committee, which will be coming to the committee in the next few weeks. Thank you, Chair.
But that slide doesn't say that. The National Treasury recommendation is that ESCOM is requested to commence with the condemnation process for this contract as it was declared irregular. So the issue of consequence management is secondary, but the contract was declared irregular.
That's correct, Chair. The condemnation report is the one that was already submitted in July, but because it did not indicate clearly the issue of consequence management, the team went back now to do a determination report, which is an internal report internally. So what we have since then, we have identified the people that participated in that transaction. So what the slide is indicating is that
We are putting together a new coordination report that we will be submitting to the committee following the determinations that we have done in tonight.
So if there was contract management, the contract would have been reviewed.
Apologies, Chair, I lost you there.
You made an application on a new you made an application on an irregular contract. That's the nub of the issue. I'm failing to find the nexus between consequence management and the irregularity of the contract. Why is the contract irregular? I just think you need to think through that explanation very carefully.
Yes, Chair. The contract is irregular because instead of us
to contract manage, you know, this cop. Yeah, instead of you.
Yeah, you're getting lost. We don't get you.
No, I'm saying, Babusam, the contract was declared irregular. So the issue of consequence management, I failed to find the nexus between the irregularity of the contract and the consequence management. Suffice it to say that consequence management is insofar as the implementation is concerned. But substantively, what made the contract irregular? I think that's the issue.
Chair, if I may come in, the reason why the contract was irregular, because it was started as a sole source instead of it being a single source. Hence, we had to come to the committee to indicate it as such as part of the condonation process.
No, then say that. Because then that goes to contract management, not consequence management. This consequence management thing is a cop-out. It's second. Because then ultimately, then why are applications on being made on the wrong basis? That is the issue. Let's not hide behind convenient statements and then, no. I just wanted to flag that because to put it on record that it was because there was no consequence management is incorrect. The application, the contract was irregular. Consequence management doesn't regularize contracts. But you can proceed. Sorry, Mam Dulasha, I just wanted to flag that issue. You can proceed. Yes, come.
Honorable Chair, Natasha Niskal to ENS Econ Oil slide, and honorable members here, we were asked to demonstrate the cost effectiveness of the appointment of ENS for the Econ Oil litigation process. I think you must be on slide number 9. And effectively what we've done, we've gone through our internal legal panel process where it was a mini tender where rates were submitted. And based on those rates submitted, we then appointed ENS for this transaction. And then and also we do understand from a legal perspective as the transactions continue, through the legal process and the court cases, it's important to retain the same legal team with regard to Econ Oil. Chair, I think those were the names I picked up when the Honourable Member Tulashi was mentioned. I may have missed some. Chair, I think the last one was the heritage one, if we can go back to that. Sekamoto can just quickly talk to that one. Honourable Chair, the matter is being discussed with the Limpopo Provincial Heritage Resources Authority. Complainants and the Department of Arts and Culture for resolution. That's where we are in terms of this. The audit report will be available once it's concluded, and auditors were satisfied with the completion of the project and the report. Okay, those are the expansions that I picked up that we were requested to go into. I may have missed one or two because of the connectivity, Chair. Thanks.
Mam Tola, sir.
Chair.
Although Honourable Chair. Yes, Chair.
I was asking you to come in, Mam Tola, sir.
Oh, thank you very much, Chair. Although you pursue the matter, but I still could not get the exact answer from the officials, Chair. You explain that there is, to an extent, the definition is not the one that the ESCOM is having, and you ask a question, but I did not hear exactly what was the official response in that regard. Thanks, Chair.
All right. Thanks, Mam Tulashe. I see the hand of Babu Somyo.
You know, the issue that you drove for ESCOM to understand the causal factors of these expansions and deviations. sitting and looking into all these areas which are of reference now might lead into something which I might call a policy drive from ESCOM side, which could be informed by the fact that they always go for such applications to Treasury, and the amounts are big, either caused by the fact that the contract fell on the wayside because of its own time, or it was incorrectly awarded, and this is the case in this instance in terms of its own defiance. And therefore, ESCOM would feel a bit strangled by the fact that these processes require observation of the PFMA. The question which could be lost there is to whether this institution has its own policy which seeks to create predictability on procuring goods and services. And such a policy is in line with a PFMA, and therefore these things which would fly on a factor of application after application, denial, restrictions in terms of such applications, being caused by a lack of observation of such a policy which informs procuring
by the a body, ESCOM. So my main worry is looking into such instances. Always they would apply. Treasury would have a condition, and after that condition has been laid, they would go back. Why is it always like such? Because the failure of predictability for me creates problems for ESCOM in the first instance, that their procurement line is a bit blurred and does not necessarily assist ESCOM's functionality going forward. And that flows off and away from the legal prescripts as they cover these areas of procurement. So I'm trying to somewhat expand on the point that you have referred to, Chair, something which ESCOM should look into quite appropriate. You can have deviations, expansions, which go to billions of rands, where contracts are somewhat spared life through such expansions, extensions going forward. Others from 2013, others 2017, and this is a causal factor which gets into green contracts by default. Thank you, Chair.
All right, thank you, Absalom. Let's get to respond to those issues that have been raised from ESCOM. And then, colleagues, please, in the if you wish to speak.
As you're allowing ESCOM to come, I heard that this matter happened in fact in 2017. Now the report is saying there's now the ESCOM is preparing for another determination report. I just want to ask, how long does it take, or how long are they going to take in making sure that whoever has been alleged to be involved in this in consequence management in fact is going to be implemented? As part of the questions that Honorable Tommy has just raised, if I can also get that chance. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Please come.
Chair, thank you to Honorable Somio. I think Honorable Somio, so we do have our procurement policy. We've aligned it with National Treasury regulations. I think what has been positive in the last year, honorable members, one, ESCOM has weekly meetings with National Treasury and DPE, where we discuss the procurement transactions. And in particular, when it comes to the expansions and deviations, we have follow-up sessions with National Treasury to explain the reasoning behind the deviations and expansions. Yes, honorable members, for this year, I think we've put in these deviations, but I think firstly, we do respect that deviations is an exception to the rule. We've in this financial year concluded over 1,600 new contracts, of which then the deviations that we've applied to National Treasury was 23 deviations, honorable members. And we have, as part of the deviations, I know we're still going to get to it, honorable chairperson and members, we have taken, especially around sole source and single source, a more cautionary approach in requesting those deviations. And you will see that come through where, as I think Stephen has explained earlier, we then go back to a single source. I do believe that in that engagement and direction and guidance we're receiving from National Treasury is helping to improve the quality of the applications and then the results thereof. But we do acknowledge that, as you've always said, Honorable Chair, deviations is an exception to the rule. Maybe just for the members to also appreciate, we now report deviations and expansions on a monthly basis to the Executive Committee, as well as to the Board Investment and Finance Committee with a report going to the full board. So that's what we've put in place in terms of the deviations and expansions, and it's getting the necessary attention. We also agree that that focus is now cascaded across the divisions, where they have their own heads of procurement and to the respective group execs that are looking at. I think honorable members, on expansions, we need to also take into account the continuity of certain transactions that requires Eskom to expand. And maybe lastly, I think honorable Somio or one of the members asked around expiry. We do monitor that as well to ensure that going forward, we don't find ourselves in a situation where contracts expires. That should not be a reason for requesting expansions, and we need to do that proper planning timelessly, which we're focusing on. Honorable Chairperson, that's just some responses from Eskom, but we can follow it up with much more detailed written responses. Thanks.
All right, colleagues, are there any other questions? I just want to go to the Hopewell expansion, the one in quarter two, right, number 12. All right, Honorable Mawoto, I've noted your hand. Sorry about that. All right, the Hopewell, just three things on my part. Were there any payments made? Because item four there on the approval conditions, is that any payment made to the contractors will be independently verified before it is made? Was that done? Two, item five, any expenses incurred before this approval is classified as irregular, as it was not supported by National Treasury. Were any payments or any expenses incurred in that regard? And of course, then the status, Eskom has established a panel of consultants from which one will be selected to provide an independent verification payments that will be made to CBMS contractor for the approved period of 1 October 2021 to 31 March 2022. What is the status in that regard of this contract today? So we are up to date on that one. And then after that, Honorable Mawoto, you can come in. Sorry about that. Eskom?
Stephen, if you can respond.
No, that's what my... So my side, Chair, is Peggy speaking here. Thank you, Honorable Chair. Yes, indeed, the conditions that for all the payment need to be independently verified, it is being done, Chair. We have got, like we've indicated, the independent QS that verifies the project manager's submissions for the claims of what the contractor is also submitting. So that is currently being done, Chair. And then also the status of this contract, like I've indicated, I've met last week with the senior leadership of the contractor with the project team on site. We are in progress to meet this date, and the contractor is also doing the final final work on this work that is being done, that this contract will then be seized by the end of this month, Chair. So that confirmation I've received on site last week when I was doing site review, Chair. Thanks.
Okay, and were expenses incurred before this approval?
Yeah, Chair, just to state that there was no payment that was done before the approval, as that was put in, the contractor was put off during that period before when we were waiting for the approval, waiting for NT's approval.
Okay. And then, has this contract been extended before?
Yes, Chair, it has been extended previously. It was mainly due to the, because this contract, Chair, if I may just explain, it's a contract that is dealing with the control from different plants once they are finished. But because of the delays on the civil side and one of the civil contractors that went on business rescue as well, so they couldn't then finalize their scope of work, Chair. So, but then there were also delays that were coming from their side, which we have then penalized that through the contract allowed delay damages as well. We have maximized the delay damages on this contract that was allowed on the contract. So there were delays coming from the contractor itself and then from the other civil contractors. And we have dealt with that, and the one that has now went on business rescue. So then there we are dealing with the practitioner now, dealing with some of the payment. The contractor is still continued to finalize, although not in full speed. But yeah, that was the main reason for the extensions of this contract. Thank you.
How many extensions have there been on this contract?
The last one was the fourth one, Chair, that we did in November.
So this contract has been extended four times.
That's correct, Chair.
Sweet. Right. I'll come back to that. Honourable Mawata, over to you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair, and greetings to the colleagues. I want to disagree with the CFO when he says that these contracts get expanded and they make sure they don't last before being expanded. It looks like ESCOM is creating its own separate legal framework that regulates the procurement that is outside the National Treasury. Because why, and even the last speaker, just before you, Chair, he says this contract has been expanded four times already. There's been four extensions. That's wrong. Why are you keep on extending and extending? It means that you are not following proper project management principles at ESCOM. That's what comes to mind. And you know, Chair, you are jeopardizing somebody else who could have done that work for you, for ESCOM. And now you are consistently expanding on this project. So it can't be correct because you are setting a wrong precedent. You can't have your own rules that are outside National Treasury. And I want the CFO really to comment on this. The second one, Chair, is there was a bid that was reviewed and set aside of Econ Oil. Now, has there been any consequence management process undertaken? And what is the status now of Econ Oil as a supplier of ESCOM? And is now Econ Oil allowed to trade with ESCOM? Or not, and if not, why? Because we need to be informed if there's any legal basis for such restrictions. And the last one, unfortunately, is to the CEO who's not here today, but maybe the chairperson of the board will then take it. How will the CEO defend his defamation case instituted by Econ Oil for his conduct? And then what are the cost implications to ESCOM for such litigation? Is the bill going to be put by ESCOM or is it going to be paid directly from the CEO? Thank you, Chair.
All right, let's get responses to that.
Chairperson, thanks, Honorable Motwe. Honorable Motwe, I didn't say that contracts don't expire. We are now tracking the expiry date and going forward to ensure that they don't expire, and it will minimize expansions going forward. So that's the control in place. It's definitely getting the focus at the executive level and the respective GEs. We have enhanced that control at ESCOM. However, there are certain circumstances under which ESCOM would apply for expansions, and we'd have to motivate that with National Treasury. I think what I just wanted to highlight is we have seen that the engagements and the guidance and the turnaround times between ESCOM and National Treasury has improved significantly, and that's helping with the operational requirements. We do acknowledge that there are areas that we must improve on internally, and we giving that the necessary attention. As I said, this deviations reports are now submitted to the board on a quarterly basis and EXCO on a monthly basis. Thanks for that. On Econ Oil, Honorable Chief, I can ask our head of legal, Mel, to respond on the Econ Oil questions. Thanks.
Thank you, Caleb. Good morning, Chairperson and committee members. On Econ Oil, so there were several questions asked. I've noted them, and I will try to address them each separately. So ESCOM is currently in litigation for various forms of litigation with Econ Oil. The one referred to here relates to the contract which has been declared invalid. The latest development with that one is that Econ Oil has taken the matter to the Supreme Court of Appeal for on appeal initially, which was dismissed, and then subsequently for reconsideration, which was also dismissed. This is basically something that happened in the last month. As a status, the status of Econ Oil as a supplier at ESCOM, so Econ Oil has been suspended following ESCOM's supply review process. The suspension itself has not been communicated, I guess, yet to the National Treasury, and there's no application to actually blacklist Econ Oil at this point in time. It is something that ESCOM has in the pipeline and is currently considering. At the moment, the position we've taken is that due to the various forms of irregular conduct, fraud, corruption, etc., that has been identified against Econ Oil, we are currently not trading with Econ Oil, and as a business, it's a decision that we've taken. Regarding the question on the defamation case against the CEO of ESCOM, so that matter has actually been silent for a while now. We haven't heard from Econ Oil. In terms of the cost allocation as to how the legal fees will be paid, I'm actually not, I don't have a mandate to speak on that. So if I could take instructions and revert on that question, that would be appreciated. Thank you, Chair.
All right, thank you very much. Colleagues, are there any further hands on this part? Mam Tolashe?
Thank you very much, Chair. I'm fine with the responses.
Okay. Thank you very much. Colleagues, if I may, I just want to, I think we ESCOM must just on all the expansions that are there. The ones from quarter one. Let's just go to the quarter one. It's item number 46, the on generation. The ones conditionally supported. from 46. Right. Has that contract been expanded before?
Chair, yes, it had.
How many times?
I think it was about 10 times before this, Chair.
You see, that is ultimately the issue. You set up these contracts and then you entrench them as evergreen contracts through extensions. Why? Because this is green contracts through the back door. Why is the contract being extended 10 times?
So, Chair, with the previous one, there was litigation against Eskom by one of the suppliers, and then that delayed the whole process of getting a new contract in place. And that's why it had to be extended or expanded for those many times.
When did this litigation take place?
It started in 2015, Chair.
And ended in?
It ended in 2018, Chair, and that's when we were able to start a new process.
Yeah, it ended in 2018. And so how many times has it been expanded since 2018?
Chair, we will check the exact details of that. I'm not sure. Chair,
so there was an extension post the litigation.
Yes, yeah, Chair. When we started
the litigation argument then falls out the window, because you seem to make it as the caveat of the extensions, but that had already happened and it's already done and dusted. 2018 to 2021. You are expanding the same contract.
Chair, after the litigation, we then started a new procurement process. And I think the part that is indicated there, it just indicates some of the complications that we had that resulted in further extension. So that process was started. And as I said, it ended then with us awarding on the 1st of January. But since that, the litigation ended, a new process was started immediately, and any extensions were due to the delays in getting that new contract or the process of getting that new contract in place.
So then ultimately what I'm saying is right, the contracts become entrenched as evergreen contracts because of shortcomings within your system. Because you can't prop up the issue of litigation as the reason. Because that ended in 2018 and now in 2022, and you were granted an extension by National Treasury for 3 months. So that your contract management is found wanting. And what is actually just not right on the part of Eskom is to try and find the convenient responses to the complex reality. I mean, like I'm saying, if it's been extended 10 times, how many times has it expanded after the litigation?
Chair, as I said, we will confirm that. I do not have the exact number of times
You see, Eskom, I've said this, don't come here unprepared and with half-baked responses. I've said this on numerous occasions.
Chair,
because you are on your own thing. Right. Then there's the expansion on quota one on generation. It doesn't have a number, it's TBC, the fuel oil modification. Right, what's the progress on that? Because the existing contract expired on 30 November and 31 December 2021 respectively. So what's the status there now? Because it's now March 2022.
So the contracts did not expire. They were due to expire on those dates. We did get approval from National Treasury to extend that approval expires at the end of March. And that's when we aim to get a new contract in place.
But that's not what that slide says. That slide doesn't say that.
You acknowledge that, Chair.
You say it didn't expire, but your own slide says the existing contracts expired on 30 November and 31 December 2021, respectively. It's now March 2022. So which is which?
Chair, the contracts did not expire. They were due to expire then before we got the approval from National Treasury.
Right. I'm assuming I'm speaking to Mr. Tugasha, right?
Yes, Chair.
Right. If you can please read for me the bullet from the two from the bottom on that slide.
The bullet reads, Chair, the existing contracts expired on 30 November and 31 December 2021, respectively. So, Chair, that's an error on the slide. The contracts were, it was supposed to read that the contracts were due to expire on 30 November and 31 December 2021.
CFO? I just wonder whether are there any other changes that you would like to make to this presentation?
Chairman, apologies. No, nothing from the Eskom team.
All right. Could you please just flag that particular one? Right, the next one, I just want to go through the history item. Item 57, I will get National Treasury to come in now. Right, that one, item 57, National Treasury supports the extension for 6 months only, ending 31 December 2021. Right, so what's the status of that now?
Chair, that was extended further. So the evaluation currently are in progress. So it was extended until the end of March as well. And the contract will be in place as from the 1st of April 2022.
So you've expanded on both the extension?
In quarter two, Chair, yes, there was another approval.
How many other expansions have taken place on this particular contract?
Chair, it was only these two, the first one to December and then the next one to March.
So you are due to, this is the last month, are you on track to meet your deadlines?
Yes, Chair, we are on track.
But National Treasury, you can, I hope, Chair of the board, you see the pattern I'm painting here. I just hope that it's noted. Right, National Treasury, let's go to you. I will come back to these expansions and then honorable colleagues, if there's any other further issues you'd like to raise, we'll take those, and then Honorable Swartz will take us through AMA deviation. National Treasury.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning to you and all the honorable members and colleagues in the call. Chair, I'm going to start a little bit at the back with the contract modifications that were raised and discussed earlier on, to say that, Chairperson, the challenge that has been from our side is that some of these contract modifications, especially that you see that comes over and over and over again, they tend to be established through deviations, so through sole source deviations or single source deviation. The biggest challenge with that, with establishing a contract in that manner, is that right from the beginning, Chairperson, it did not follow a fair process, it did not follow a transparent process, but most importantly, it did not follow a competitive process. So when we see the contract modification coming to National Treasury for consideration, you find that we find ourselves in a position that, first of all, we are not in a position or in no other position but to support these contract modifications simply just because of continuity and the fact that the projects have to continue and the impact that failure of those contracts to continue has on Eskom's ability to deliver on electricity, Chairperson. So that is the first hard position. Then the second hard position becomes, right, so how cost effective are these processes when we keep on modifying these contracts on perpetuity, Chairperson, which then we when we then support, have to support with the condition that says these financial implications have to be assessed. From our perspective, we believe that Eskom is supposed to assess these cost implications prior to even approaching National Treasury for modification. As part of contract management, they should monitor the financial implications of the project. But you would see that with the conditions that we then put when we support a contract modification because of the nature of the services or the products that are being required, we then say you have to independently assess them and give us feedback. And you the cost have to be reasonable. Chairperson, a number of times we have found ourselves in a position where we would go back and say, for us, this looks a little bit exorbitant. And there are a number of projects, and as you would have seen in some of the letters, where we said, look, we will also take our own time to go out to the market and find service providers that can help us to come back and assess some of these contracts and projects ourselves independently, Chairperson, to bring some sort of assurance or comfort that there is some level of cost effectiveness in how some of these contracts have been modified. The other challenge, Chairperson, that you would have seen, and I'll try and figure out exactly, just to give you an example of a contract where time is extended, and I think it's the contract that has been extended for 5 years, where the extension is mostly for time. But the reason why the extension is mostly for time is because the contract is being funded by a contingency fund. A contingency fund is fund that, or a provision that has been set aside to deal with unforeseen circumstances. Again, Chairperson, when you use a contingency fund, there has to be clear assessment that the fund have been utilized for their intended purposes, and they're not utilized for failure to perform, for failure to manage the contract properly. As a result, you incur unnecessary costs. Furthermore, that what we would have seen, Chairperson, and which we particularly had a problem with, especially with the Honeywell application, was that there was just significant element of fruitless and wasteful expenditure on that one in particular, Chairperson. That is why the assessment for us is critical. It remains critical. But further, the identification of the fruitless and wasteful expenditure that potentially exists within those modifications in that contract become very, very important, Chairperson, because fruitless and wasteful expenditure is a framework that has to be followed. If the monies need to be recovered, the monies have to be recovered. And that process is critical for us to continue up until its conclusion. Chairperson, on the issue of the extension of the fuel oil tender, the contract has been extended, Chairperson. The status that is on the presentation, I think it's not the most updated status, because as at the date that were presented on the presentation, the actions that were supposed to be taken, meaning the conclusion of the tender process, was not yet done. In actual fact, it is not done as well. And it talks to the issues that our colleagues from ESCOM was referring to around the battles with Econ Oil, and whether the fact that have they been restricted from doing business with the state, have they been restricted from doing business with ESCOM. What we know is that ESCOM did make a submission to National Treasury to extend the contract further, I think up until the end of May, in a bid to conclude the evaluation of this tender. But the challenges in the conclusion of the evaluation of the tender borders around the question of whether Econ Oil has been restricted from doing business with ESCOM. And our colleague from ESCOM has indicated that, at least from National Treasury's perspective, we have not yet received a request from ESCOM to restrict Econ Oil from doing business with the state. Chairperson, I think I will stop there for now. Thank
you. Can you just which one is that? And so that slide can be put up.
I think you said it's number 46.
All right, 46.
That is the one, Chairperson.
You can slide.
The previous one that was slided, that is the one.
Right, so. All right, so the one where there's been further expansions. Yeah, okay. No, it's fine. I noted that one, and that's why I was asking the CFO whether they would want to make any further changes to that. All right, Honorable Swartz, let's go to you. Thank you, National Treasurer. Let's go to you on deviations, and then we will come back to the expansions. Honorable Swartz, we are in your hands. Colleagues, please indicate when you wish to speak.
Good morning, Honorable Chair.
Babu Spamia?
I'm sorry, Chair. I've been trying to raise my hand.
Okay. You can proceed. My apologies. Yeah. You can proceed.
No, thanks, Chair. Thanks, Chair. I wanted to ask just a question from Treasury. Do you, at the Treasury level, do you anticipate through tracking all these matters that relate to expansions, deviations of contracts, which I think they come to yourselves through thick files from time to time, that you would or you would have had some form of engagement with ESCOM to waiver the application of procurement requirements as per your regulations as well per defined prescripts of PFMA?
Chairperson, can I ask? I don't understand the question, Chair. If Honourable Samyoshi can maybe rephrase it a little bit for me.
In looking into the track and trail of the applications for deviations and the conditions that goes with from your side, maybe a cause for frustration from ESCOM. Do you anticipate, or have you ever had any engagement with ESCOM, which might result into yourselves creating a special dispensation for ESCOM on matters of procurement because of the nature of these matters which come to yourselves for approvals in as far as expansions and deviations?
Honourable Chairperson, through you, yes, we have had engagements, Chairperson. There were requests from ESCOM Chairperson that allude to the challenges that they are experiencing insofar as procurement is concerned, especially when they would like to effect issues of deviations. Mostly because of the times or the turnaround times that sometimes it takes National Treasury to respond, but also Chairperson, because of the board decision that had been taken, that certain procurements from ESCOM should be done through what we may call single source deviations by approaching OEM. For cost effectiveness. We had numerous engagements, Chairperson, where we had to outline the different challenges that ESCOM was facing insofar as compliance is concerned. And we continue to engage, Chairperson. Has the dispensation been granted, Chairperson? No, there hasn't been any dispensation so far that has been granted to ESCOM insofar as that is concerned. But there has been engagement, there has been a request for such a dispensation to be granted to ESCOM. Thank you.
Right, thank you very much on that. Right, Honourable Swartz.
Good morning, Honourable Chair. Morning to the DM and to the Honourable Members and Officials. On deviations not supported by Treasury, on Trans-Africa Projects Pty Limited, why did ESCOM prefer the services of Trans-Africa Projects Pty Limited and not test the market? On what basis did the ESCOM official, Mr. Stephen Meyers, approve this deviation? On what basis was Trans Africa Projects Pty Limited preferred? Was there any investigation conducted by ESCOM to ensure that none of its employees have financial interest in Trans Africa Pty Limited or any of the companies, especially those that were applications for deviation? Thank you, Honourable Chair.
All right, let's get a response to that.
Yeah, thanks very much, Chair. Thanks, Honourable Members. Trans-African Projects is a partially owned subsidiary of ESCOM Enterprises. And for many years in the past, Trans-African Projects had a internal supplier status. And hence, whenever we need specialized resources, and in fact, for slide 12 and 13, where we wanted to increase our performance capability through bringing in specialized resources on the training academy and specialized resources to do some of the projects, because we had used them in the past for so many years, that's why they were approached. However, when the internal supplier status was withdrawn, it must have been around about February, March last year, we did make an application to see if we could get a single source, which was rejected, and we have gone into the open market to get those resources. In terms of any conflict of interest, I do believe any declaration of interest, conflict of interest, are fully up to date. As far as I know, there is no shared interest or shareholding amongst employees at ERI and CAP. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Swartz, you can just proceed with questions so that we save time.
Okay. And Omni Africa Pty Limited, did Eskom take the necessary actions to ensure that Omni Africa is the OEM? Did they obtain the necessary certification and supporting documentation to confirm this? Was this information submitted to National Treasury? Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Sorry, Chair. Trans African Projects is more of a consulting based type company which has subject matter experts rather than OEM. So they don't produce turnkey solutions or proprietary type equipment. Rather, they have a grouping of subject matter experts which can add value to our projects. Thanks, Chair.
But that is not what I asked. I was asking about Omni Africa Pty Limited, not Trans Africa Projects. My question.
Sorry, Chair. Then it's not part of ERI, Omni Africa. Omni Africa's. Apologies for that, Chair, from my side.
What I ask is that did Eskom take the necessary actions to ensure that Omni Africa is the OEM? Did they obtain the necessary certification and supporting documentation to confirm this? Was this information submitted to National Treasury?
Good morning, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. This is Faith Byrne. I'll be addressing the question around Omni Africa. Yes, Chair, we did. Get a letter from the OEM, and we did indicate that in the letter to National Treasury.
On deviations conditionally supported by National Treasury, Bentley Systems International Limited, in their presentation, Eskom stated that the RFP to the open market is being finalized and will be issued during quarter four for the year 2021-2022, end of March 2022. Is Eskom still on track with this? Will this tender be issued on time to avoid further applications for deviations and to ensure business continuity of Eskom operations?
Thank you, Chair and Honourable Member. This is Faith Byrne again, and I'll be answering that. Yes, we are still confident that we will be able to issue it before the end of March, and we will endeavour to do this so that we do not compromise the deadlines in the business. Thank you, Chair.
On White and Case, why did Eskom apply for deviation for the provision of legal services from White and Case? Why was this company preferred? What were National Treasury's conditions for this contract? Have all these conditions been met? The details for this deviation are not provided by Eskom on their submission. Is it on National Treasury's submission to SCOPA?
Honorable member, I think the White Chain case one may relate to quarter three, but just on a high level, YTMK's request for debt deviation and to continue with them, they had looked at all our loans conditions and developed a tool that at any point in time can see whether a certain clause in a transaction on our loans results in breaches. And the request to National Treasury was to continue with debt services as we embarked on the unbundling process, and you would need such services for lender consent. But Honourable Member, we can provide that detailed responses also in writing because it wasn't on our records for Q1 and Q2. And eventually my recollection is it was rejected by National Treasury, and then we had to go and test the market again as ESCOM. Thanks.
So when you do respond, will you be able to also tell us that the 42,382,720 was not paid to White and Case in this instance?
We'll do that in our response, Honorable Fast.
Okay. Law Trusted Third Party Services Pty Limited. The motivation for this deviation was that the system went live in April 2020 instead of February 2019 due to challenges in getting ESCOM policy signed off by all the relevant forums. Who was responsible for this delay?
Thank you, Honorable Member. This is Faith Byrne again. I don't have specific names of who was responsible, but I can give the reasons around the responsible, the reasons for the delay. The reasons for the delay were really around the fact that the architecture was initially for a cloud solution, and at that point in time, cloud was not approved for ESCOM, and so that had to change. And then the second reason had to do with the policy that needed to be adapted for it to be implemented. So those were some of the reasons that caused the delay. Thank you, Member.
I hear you, Ms. Ben, but you have a response on the reasons, but you do not know who was responsible for the delay. Surely you should know who worked on this particular contract or who is responsible for this, because I do not understand why you would say you do not know who was responsible for the delay, but you have the reasons why there was a delay. So I think that we should surely be told who was responsible for this, even if it's not today, but we should know, because I cannot say that I do not know who is responsible, but equally have reasons why there was a delay, but to not know who was responsible for the delay, because we are talking of April 2020 instead of implementation in 2019. So I do not believe that ESCOM would not know who was responsible for the delay.
Thank you, Honorable Member. I would just have to get the exact name and share that in a closed format. But the delays were within the project team and the project manager, and that would be within the IT division. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, but still I am saying to you that now you had just said to me now you do not know who's responsible for the delay. When I interrogate you further, you are now saying that there's a manager, there's an IT manager, but you will still look for the name. Those are the problems that we have when you are responding to us, because surely it can't be that you come here and then all of a sudden there is amnesia on who is an IT manager, and surely there was a project team leader, if you are mentioning project team. I'm just raising this so that when ESCOM comes here, you must know who is responsible for what, and not only be able to give us reasons of delays, because it seems like at most of the times when you come here, you do not want to take the responsibility of naming who is in charge of what, when, and how. On ESCOM Road Tech Industries, ERI, the motivation provided by ESCOM for the deviation was that the minister and COP26 delegation's visit to Komati was deemed as an emergency. National Treasury's response was received after the work was completed. This application was not approved by National Treasury due to poor planning. Why was the site only prepared when the minister and the delegation visited the power station? Why did ESCOM go ahead with the work without obtaining the necessary approval from National Treasury?
Thanks, Honourable Member. Mandy, are you responding to this one?
Yes, I will. Thank you, CFO. Good afternoon. Good morning, everybody. Honourable Member, the planning for this project was actually in place, and we had scheduled the construction for according to our plan. However, we received notification a few days before this plan visit that the ministerial delegation plus an international ministerial delegation were going to visit Komati way ahead of the schedule that we had planned. So we had to move up our schedule and do emergency work over the weekend to prepare the site for this visit. So that was the reason for this request. It was over a Saturday and Sunday that we made the request so that we could start the work. ERI were on site. We did have the necessary people on site due to ERI be on site in any case. And so that's when the work started, so that we could have it ready when the ministers visited. So, Honourable Member, that was the reason for moving the work up in the schedule.
So you are wanting to tell us that you went ahead with such a huge project to visit a site, and nobody had bothered to check whether you've got approval from National Treasury or not. Because the reason why National Treasury did not give you approval was due to poor planning. But you, in your response, are saying to me that you had planned. ESCOM had planned, yes. But does your planning give you a go-ahead without you double-checking with National Treasury? And you are equally saying it was over a weekend. So is that an excuse to implement a project because you were doing it over a weekend? And maybe because you are also citing that it had an international ministerial visit. So does it mean that when we have an international ministerial visit, we then bypass all our policies in relation to Treasury giving you a go-ahead? Or is ESCOM trying to tell us that if a minister tomorrow decides to visit a site, you will at all costs go along with your plans because ESCOM had planned, and not follow due process in terms of what must be approved by National Treasury, in that National Treasury did not approve your application due to poor planning? But you are saying to me that you had planned, and because it was over a weekend, that gives you justification to have proceeded because there was a a ministerial visit, which was coupled with an international ministerial delegation. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, if I may respond. So Honourable Member, maybe if I could just clarify some of the context. So we did not implement the full project. The work that we needed to get done that weekend was to actually bring material onto site, to transport material from Rochevo as well in to Komati, which we normally do use ERI for. So it was tested by our procurement team for a reasonable cost. So it was not the full project that was implemented. It was transporting material to site and doing some earthworks. And that was not the full project. We also then made the application on the Monday to National Treasury. So it, by no means were we flouting governance processes. The context also was that we were asked to demonstrate our repowering and repurposing projects to the ministers, to the delegation, because we were trying to obtain funding via the COP26 for the full repowering repurposing program. So all of, like I mentioned earlier, all of these projects were planned to be implemented. In fact, we actually have gone out to the market now to the, for the full project. So the work that was done during that weekend was mainly to transport material to site. So by no means are we saying that we would flout governance processes just to just for ministerial visits. But in that case, we were demonstrating that we actually are serious about repowering and repurposing our sites. And so a minimal amount of work was done that weekend. But Honourable Member, we are out in the market now actually for that full project to be implemented. So we are following that process in terms of implementing the full project on site.
Just want Honourable Swartz, if I may, sorry. The action taken, right? On site. And by the way, here you're speaking about 850,000 for site preparation and pre-works to comply with the state and intergovernmental delegation at 850,000. I get the weekend part, but how does it correlate then to the initial works were performed by the ERI for a period of 3 weeks, and that part of the works will be taken through the coordination process? However, the bulk of the scope of the work has been reissued to the market. Okay, I get that part. But it's boggling, actually. Because I just get a sense that the request was sent to CPO at Eskom, by Eskom CPO, and the response was received after, right? Now, whether it's 1 rand or 2 rands or 850,000 rands, due process is due process. And I don't think there's an appreciation for that in the response that I'm hearing, because it was not the full scope of the project. Like, it just, and also I'm just interested to know on this one, when did the processes of engaging National Treasury actually start? Did they start for the purposes of the ministerial visit, or it started way prior for other things, which is now, of course, landed in the books of 850,000 rand irregular. So I'm sorry, Honourable Swart, I just wanted clarity on that.
Chair, thanks. If I may, through you, just to confirm, yes, we will follow a condemnation process for the work that was out of that was not approved. The actual work to repurpose Komati was part of our project plan, and it was a project that was going to be implemented in September, October last year. But when we got notification of this visit by the ministerial delegation, we moved up that schedule, and that's when we engaged National Treasury. So part of the original project plan was included the engagements with National Treasury, but we were going to obviously go out on market, open market for this work. But because we had to move up the schedule and demonstrate to the delegation that was visiting that we were starting work at Komati Power Station, we had to engage National Treasury at that point for this emergency work to be done.
Honourable Swartz, you can proceed. Sorry for that interruption. Honourable Swartz? Colleagues, is Honourable Swartz online?
I suspect we've lost Chair. Let's verify.
Okay.
Chair, she's trying to reconnect again.
Okay. Thank you. All right, I think the next deviation, is she back on, is number 86. Okay, she's back. All right, Honorable Swartz.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. That was my last question. But I think you, by EFSA's understand, for them to send it and yet to money, but then I think I was a question with you. Thank you.
Honorable Swartz, we're losing you. Right. Colleagues, are there any questions on your part? Please just come in if you wish to speak.
Chair.
Hello. Yes.
Okay. It's
Mkonto. All right, Mkonto, please.
Can I come in now, Chair?
Yes, please.
Okay. Thanks, Chair, for the opportunity. Good morning to honorable members, colleagues from ESCOM and National Treasury. Chair, I have been listening attentively to questions posed by fellow members and the responses given thereof. But Chair, I did not get, there is one member that asked about what is exactly going to happen to those who deliberately inculcated the unlawful culture of deviations and expansion and ultimately decided to leave the entity. Can we get a formal commitment, Chair? Because I did not hear that as to exactly what is going to happen to them. Can we get a formal commitment from ESCOM to say this is exactly they envisage doing, taking actions against those who brought all this to this entity, and then when they see signs of them being brought to book, they decided to leave. Thank you, Chair.
Can I respond to this, Chair?
Yes, Prof, you may proceed.
Yes, I think we follow, I think, laws in this country, and there is a classic law that when somebody resigns from an organization, you have no control or responsibility on them, except if there are criminal activities that have been conducted, which you should report, and they follow the formal laws. So unless anybody who resigns is accompanied by some criminal activity, there is very little that ESCOM or any organization in the country can do around such a person. So that's the principle that we follow. We are obviously at the moment preparing ourselves to deal with the State Capture Commission outcomes. And we will observe some of these principles. We can't commit ourselves to following people that have already resigned, which will be found to be unlawful. That's all that I want to say.
Okay. I think this, of course, is that outstanding discussion that we have had around people globe-trotting around the different government departments and state departments, yet it's one government, you know. So I think it's a discussion that does need to go further. Mantrash, I see your hand is up.
Yes, Chair, my hand is up. Chair, I thought the Honorable Chairperson of the Board will then complete his explanation to say, now that in the ESCOM especially, there's a trend when the investigation starts on anyone, that person will resign. This is now a trend in ESCOM. I thought the Honorable Chair will then take us through under the same rules that govern the country and everybody else, whether we are going to have this situation as ESCOM and the taxpayer is going to enjoy this, that people are alleged on corruption, then they decide to resign before that matter has been concluded, because there's nothing that we can do anyway. I just raised that. I'm very worried, Chair, because the Honorable Chair also made mention of the fact that they are to deal with the Zondo report. Does that mean that insofar as ESCOM is concerned, nobody will be liable on anything, especially when those people decided to resign? I just want to put this broad question, Chair. I'm very worried, Chair, because since we have been listening, the cases of 2017, this is to happen, that is to happen. But at the end, people resign, and the Honorable Chair says there's nothing that they can do. Chair, maybe you can, we must take this as a committee and deal with it in another meeting. But Chair, I am very, very concerned with the statement from the Honourable Chairperson, especially noticing the trend in Eskom in particular. Thank you very much.
Well, thanks, Namtolasha. Maybe as a rider to your question, the additional question becomes, have there been any successful consequence management that has taken place at Eskom insofar as all the matters that we are dealing with are concerned, all related to these matters? Just as a yardstick measure to say that notwithstanding the modus operandi of people who leave, but if the consequence management can speak to of people who have been dealt with. Eskom?
I think you have been breaking, Chair. I couldn't catch with what you were saying, but there are lots of consequence management, I think, that we carry out at Eskom, and maybe we should prepare a document that we should submit to the committee in relation to this matter so that we don't speculate and so forth. As far as Honorable Tulaji is concerned, I mean, this is a general phenomenon. When I was at the university, you would know this, Leko, that lots of academics, when they get into trouble and they have to be disciplined, they resign. It is a general issue that the lawmakers need to attend to, because it does create a problem for all of us who are supposed to be accountable and responsible for these organizations. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Prof. All right. As Namtolasha said, this is a matter we must take forward and look at. Right. I just want, colleagues, are there any other hands? I'm always trying not to. Okay. Can we go? I want to go back to the expansions, because so item number 59, Q1, group capital, expansion request for P18CB, MS Medupi 4. The Honeywell Automation and Control Solutions. Yes, right. So is this not this one? This is Q1 group capital expansions not supported. Yes, that one. Thank you. Is this linked to what we were dealing with earlier, the Honeywell expansion?
Yes, Chair, it is the same one. It just started between the two quarters.
Right.
And he asked for those additional information, which was then concluded on the second quarter, Chair. It is exactly the same.
Right. I just wanted that confirmation so that now National Treasury says to you, it does not support this because this contract has not been properly managed, as it has been modified for a period of 54 months since inception 2013, and been operating on contingency funds, and contingency value has been varied by 887% of the original contingency value from 22 million to 217 million. Now, I'm not sure as to whether the explanation we received suffices earlier on when I posed the question how many times this contract had been expanded, and then said that the information was not there until I went back to my printed notes, and I wrote here in a red pen, red flag on this particular slide in preparation for today. Now, can you speak to that? Because the reasons that have been advanced by National Treasury are quite scathing. And certainly paint a far grimmer picture than than the euphemistic approach which anchored the response we received in this particular one. So,
okay, I think one of the issues that National Treasury asked was that this contract was fruitless and wasteful. Chair, I can confirm, because we have confirmed that the contract has not been fruitless and wasteful. The reasons why the contingency was used, because the original scope of what this contractor was supposed to do on the contract did not change, Chair. It was mainly the issue of the T's and G's and also the delays by other suppliers. But the original scope in terms of the contract did not change. The only thing that became unforeseen was this completion time, Chair. I think in hindsight, maybe it could have been managed differently. But that was the main reason. If you look at the contract value itself, at some point you have noted, Chair, that it has to be actually be reduced actually, because the contingency because of the unknowns that was dealt with, Chair. And then when National Treasury did not support initially, it was just to say, give us more information on this in terms of how it's going to be done, which we have then done and then submitted to National Treasury, Chair. Hence, then we received that approval on that.
That is hardly the point, but the indictment is in your own response. When you say that on hindsight, things should have been done differently. No, on hindsight, things should have been done correctly. And the issue is fundamentally here is that National Treasury is saying to you that this contract has not been managed properly and has been modified for a period of 54 months since inception. That is the crux and the nub of the matter. The establishment and creation of evergreen contracts through the back door of expansions and deviations. And this is a classic case. The contingency value has been varied by 887%. And then it says, there's no ownership of the improper management of this contract. I'm least bit interested in the secondary and tertiary issues. The nub of the matter is in the details which have been advanced, in the reasons that have been advanced by National Treasury. You have not managed this contract correctly or properly.
Yeah, straight to you, Chair. Maybe let me explain. I think maybe what is important to explain that the contract that Eskom have signed with Honeywell has not expired. I think it was more the internal issue in terms of, because the contract is valid until the work is done from the contract perspective, Chair. In terms of managing it, I did indicate, Chair, that the 10% where the contractor itself caused the delays, the contract we have levied the delay damages as allowed by the contract. So contractually, all what needed to be done was done, Chair, and also on the other suppliers that caused the delay, because this contractor, where it didn't cause the delays, contractually it is entitled for the extension of time, Chair. That is contractual, in line with the contract that we have signed with the contractor, until he's got access to be able to do the job. So that contract stays valid from contract, but then internal processes in terms of trying to manage things, then we've got what we call delegation, where then we needed to follow this expansion process, which is also part of the process when we are experiencing this, where the contract is still valid, but the internal controls has now run out of time. That is the issue, Chair, that we are dealing with. But from the contract laws, from the contract itself, the contract where the contractor caused delays, the delays were levied or debt. And then that's where we are. Hence, then there was from the verification. Hence, we had to also get different QS than the one that we're using to do the things to satisfy that, you know, that the there was no fruitless expenditure that was incurred as a result of this supplier. It's just because of the delays on the other contractors on the civil side that their work they couldn't be doing. Chair, thank you, Chair.
Let me take Kubab Somi and I'm going to come back to this. Babu Somi.
No, Chairman, I'm with you on this item, because it covers the entirety of this whole thing that relates to how ESCOM deals with contracts generally. You see, because this is not necessarily the year 2020, 2021 or the year 2019, 2020 or so forth. It looks like it's a trend, which is normal practice, has viewed to be a normal practice, something which is abnormal. Within ESCOM, but then it gets back into Treasury. I know for a fact it might be that Treasury has had acting chief procurement officers for a while. You see, that's not their problem. You see, it's a problem of those who are somewhat in authority at the Treasury level. But I would ask if indeed the acting procurement, chief procurement officer from Treasury is here, is he here? Is he part of the meeting? The procurement, chief procurement officer, if he's part of the meeting, I would love to hear his comment on this trend, just this trend, which we are observing, and how is he seeking to strengthen the areas that relate to matters of these suspensions and deviations, because it gets back into Treasury as well. Those are doing that to approve or disapprove others and so forth, but it still gets there in terms of the Treasury Note 3, which it might be looked into and find way of strengthening it for this purpose rather than creating loose ends, because this kind of an approach leads to a huge risk of opening entities on the line of corruption. You see, because once you loosen on contract management and these things arise, the gates are open. So it gets back to tightening the requirements as stipulated in the instruction note number 3. Is the acting procurement, chief procurement officer here, probably to give guarantee to such and allay our fears on these matters?
Honorable Chair, I am in the meeting.
All right.
With your permission, I will respond. Thank you, Honourable Member. We as National Treasury are concerned that we are seeing these variations, expansions, and deviations or modifications of contracts. You Honourable Members would note that it is Instruction Note 3 of 2016-17 that gives us the authority to request organs of state that before they expand the contract or before they deviate from any procurement process, that they seek such a permission from us so that we may be able to consider it. The Honorable Committee members and the chair, as well as ESCOM colleagues would note that it is not all the expansions or the deviations that we have supported this National Treasury after we have applied to due diligence. Ms. Basani Dekers has alluded to a number of concerns that we are having. But one of the concerns that we are having is in the interest of service delivery, specifically for ESCOM, we are in some instances put in a corner where we have to consider some of the deviations based or expansions based on the risk that we have assessed in terms of their ability to deliver electricity. For an example, if Duva Power Station has a unit that is down and they require a specific service or a specific service to bring that unit back so that they may be able to ease the strain on the network, we would consider the utilization of such a supply on a deviation process to alleviate those issues of having outages. But there are a number of concerns that we have. They may not necessarily be for ESCOM, Honorable Chair. They may be for organs of state in general. What we see, let me be specific to ESCOM. What we see generally is you would find that ESCOM would request a single source utilization of SUSE for pumps, let's say steam feed pumps, for one power station, and 3, 4, 5 a month down the line, they request for the same commodity for another power station. And then again, they would request for another for Coburg. What we then start to question with regards to such trends is what then happens with the demand plan where you are looking at critical and scarce commodities that you're supposed to map and be in a position to say, this is critical, this is scarce, this is OEM, how am I going to be able to manage procurement of such on a once-off basis, going out on tender and testing the market to establish the availability. What we found in our analysis was that one power station may have a SUSE pump, but that does not necessarily mean that the SUSE pump in that power station is the only pump that's available that can perform the certain type of work. But because there is 6 units parallel to each other and some are using SUSE pump, ESCOM would want to standardize. National Treasury would not, from a technical point of view, dictate to ESCOM that they can have SUSE and they can have another type of pump make in place of the SUSE pump. We then would caution ESCOM in such instances to say you're looking for a pump to do a certain work. You are not necessarily looking for a SUSE pump, but we do not want to infringe in their technical ability to make such a decision. Our responsibility is to make sure that the procurement process is followed. You would also have issues of expansion is a biggest concern for us because that's where corruption may evolve. People in the background may stifle the progress of the project and with the subsequent result that such an action results in project overrun and incurrence of additional costs. One of the honorable members indicated that project management is the biggest concern. Indeed, if projects are not managed properly. Overrun of projects or scope creep in the project results in project in contract modification. That is not the position that we want these projects to be in, because it then jeopardizes an opportunity for somebody else to tender for either the same type of scope, if the project allows, or it does not help us in the fiscus as well, because then we are spending much more than we projected in terms of the project plan. And National Treasury specifically, as the one that manages the fiscus, would have a terrible concern with regards to project overruns. It means that the unending injection of costs into ESCOM then starts to become a concern. Those are our concerns, and they run across most of the organs of state. One of the other things that is critically important, and that also comes out very strong from ESCOM, is it seems like in some instances, deviations or modifications are sent to National Treasury to test whether they will accept such a modification or not. Given the limitations that National Treasury are not technical in nature, our responsibility is to ensure that process is followed correctly. There's only me, I think, in the whole of the OCPO who's an engineer. The rest are qualified in other fields applicable in the SCM space. That poses a huge risk with regards to how true is what has been submitted based on the risks that are listed. From a process point of view, Honorable Chair, we may not fault the process, but when you look at the technical application in the submissions, that's where we have concerns, because we keep on having comebacks with regards to projects not completed in that instance. I may have to mention at this point that Instruction Note 3 of 2016-17 has given us that leverage to be able to provide that that support or not support function as a National Treasury. But we have taken over a huge responsibility that the accounting officers are supposed to play in terms of making sure that procurement happens as enshrined in the Constitution and as prescribed in the PFMA as well as the Triple PFA Act. We are revising that instruction note based on what we have seen in terms of the workload that we are receiving. The number of deviations and the number of contract modifications have shot over time. And that has resulted in National Treasury being the arbiter in most of these deviations and expansions. ESCOM has come out to media and said we are creating bottlenecks in their process. That could be partially true, because we apply our minds thoroughly with regards to these deviations. But we have seen that we need to give the accounting officers and the accounting authority their powers in terms of the PFMA, that they must make determination with regards to, does this warrant to be a modification? Does this warrant to be a deviation? And report to National Treasury accordingly. Such a revision is coming through, Chair, and organs of state would have it in a not so distant time with regards to that instruction note being revised. We will play an oversight responsibility and monitoring and compliance, but accounting officers must take the accountability for the decisions that they make with regards to variations and modification of contracts. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
All right, thank you. Babu Sonia?
Aha. Kulapo kufele kukutwane. That when you see these kinds of actions or inaction around matters of procurement, how do you grant the same to individuals or institutions who have shown failure tremendously on the line of meeting the prescripts? You are throwing it to their faces, and therefore you are saying the country must rely on those who break the law.
on within the context of saying they seek to drive service delivery, you know? And if this is the nature of things that we see, how on earth are you going to give this right, this kind of work, this responsibility to those who are failing us currently? You know, because your last point is what one harbors in terms of fear. Once Treasury takes a decision on such a loophole in such area. Thanks, Chair.
Right, thank you very much. Did you get response to that?
Through you, Honourable Chair, if I may respond. Honourable Member, the challenge that we're having at the moment is National Treasury becomes the bottleneck in the process due to the number of requests that we receive for deviations and for modification of contracts. We only have a limited number of full-time equivalent officials within the governance monitoring and compliance that can be able to look at these matters. It's not only matters of deviations or modification, it's also matters of condemnation processes. It's also a matters of clarification of processes to organs of state that may require. So it's also matters of reporting and making sure that we pick up trends that are unfavorable or trends that enhances government public procurement space. These deviations, maybe I should also add that National Treasury does not approve. Our responsibility in the process is to support and not support a deviation or modification. The overall accountability is with the accounting officer with regards to the delegated authority in terms of PFMA. We have played this role since 2015 when the instruction was drafted, and in 2016 when it was issued to the organs of state. What we are doing currently, Chair, is to look at the trends before the instruction and trends during, so that we may be able to manage the trends once this new instruction note is put in place. But the most important thing is that accounting officers must take accountability in terms of PFMA, also in terms of the budget that they have been given, make sure that they spent it in line with the approved prescripts that governs public procurement. And National Treasury, and report to National Treasury on frequent basis so that we may be able to pick up trends and engage with organs of states where unfavorable trends have been picked up. Committees such as this would then be in a position to have a fuller picture with regards to the trends as we would have recorded them and managed to get responses from the accounting officers based on their due delegated authority. I was excited when it was a concern for the committee when we started that the accounting officer be accountable for the final signature on these deviations rest with the accounting officer and not necessarily with the National Treasury. Thank you very much, Chair.
Okay, thank you very much. All right, Babuswana, are you fine?
I'm not fine, Chair. I'm not fine. I'm not fine. You see, we're sitting here with a list which is presented to us. Approvals, not approvals, conditional approvals. These are coming from the desk of the accounting officer, which is an indication of what is going to happen if this kind of work is given over to them to deal with in terms of the actual loopholes in the operational standards of their own institution. I'm not saying that National Treasury should do their work, of those institutions' work or accounting officers' work, but at least on the matter that relates to the areas of foreseeing the actual expenditure, which is in line with the prescript. And those areas which national treasury has foresaw over time, that these kinds of prescriptions must be issued out in terms of treasury notes. And it might be that you are getting into closer into an area of dereliction in as far as such items are concerned. And it even goes further to say, why is National Treasury failing to appoint the permanent staff on these senior positions for decisions of this nature to be taken and respected quite well in attending to matters that relate to such expense? I really don't see this as a bottleneck. If it's a bottleneck, is a caused bottleneck by such institutions. Institutions themselves, they're given law to attend to. If they fail to do so, they're in for it, and therefore they must account appropriately around those matters. You see, this is signed off by the accounting officer, and you want to say, give it to them as it is for them to follow the trail and track while they are doing this kind of work, which is really not a palatable in terms of how contract instances are somewhat managed. We're going to see a situation in this institution of a prolonged term unnecessarily of contracts, creating a perpetual contractual engagement, which was not supposed to be there in a way. So your assertion should be informed by what you see, not by what you think. And indeed, I think you'll be wrong if you say this is how things should go in as far as a question that relates to the approvals of deviations, extensions, and some. So I'm expressing my own view, Chair, on what National Treasury thinks they ought to in light of wanting to fight bottlenecks. This is not a bottleneck. If it's a bottleneck, it's caused by the very same institution.
Okay. No, thank you very much, Rossum. I think we agree with you. If it's a bottleneck, it's a necessary one in this case, for lack of a better phrase. So, colleagues, are there any other matters that you would like to raise? But I think on what we've raised, this issue of the CPO and just staff in general at National Treasury, I think we need to just have an interaction with the minister on this matter so that we can tie it down. I just have two more questions, which I think National Treasury has to, ESCOM, when you apply for deviations, most often than not, National Treasury says to you, go to the open market. Why must it take National Treasury to tell you to do that? Because whilst before I've used the very now broken record phrase of expansions and deviations are exception, not a norm, I think the flip side of that coin is that you are using expansions and deviations as a way to circumvent a due process or thorough process. So why must it take National Treasury to tell you that you need to go to the open market? I mean, I can pick one example here. Where is it? On the deviation of in quarter one, Eskom Rotech Industries, where it says that it was not supported by National Treasury, an open tender process will be followed. Well, why must it take National Treasury for you to do the right things of complying with the Constitution, amongst others, of competitive bidding processes? So you are in effect really just at times wanting an easy way out to circumvent due process. Why?
Chair, maybe thanks. Let me answer that. If you remember, the CAP was an internal supplier, had the status of internal supplier for many, many years, and we were in the process of looking at the training academy, and it was at that stage it was withdrawn. So it was only on that basis that we went to National Treasury to see if we could continue with the training academy through TAP. I must say all of our other service providers, etc., have gone to the open market. And since the ruling, we've gone to the open market on those TAP issues. Thanks, Chair.
I get that, but I'm not getting a response to my question. My question is on the reliance on expansions and deviations, and then you're getting responses along the lines of saying go to the open market, and the question is, why are you not doing that on your own volition? I can pick another one here. On quarter two, group IT, the turn to the open market will be issued in quarter four. So these are not things that are not available in the market. So I get that very, you know, singular response to the example I'm making, but I'm making a general statement with conviction on this matter. Even if you look at the conditional, some condition that says, okay, fine, but you could have and should have gone to the open market. That's the point I'm making.
Chairman, if I may respond. Chair, I think you've seen in terms of the deviations, the number of deviations that we have applied for, I think, in this period, as I introduced, was about 23, I think, up until December. And the new contracts that Eskom has concluded for the current financial year is about 1,600. So Chair, many of the circumstances where we ask for the deviations, and I'm specifically talking on deviation, it's where, as Eskom, we believe that it is a transaction that is a sole source and a single source. And as per the requirements, we need to get permission from National Treasury to be allowed to deviate. So I think that if you look at the overall number of contracts that were concluded for the year, we've only requested 23 deviations, and agree with you, Chair and honorable members, it really should be an exceptional circumstance. And maybe just between ourselves and National Treasury, and I guess the same applies with our other state organs, we'll have to get alignment on this agreement or criteria of what is this sole source or single source supplier that would then very clearly give that direction to Eskom upfront to go to the market. So I just wanted to add that, Chair. Thanks.
All right. Just as we conclude, on my side, what's the total value of your financial relationship or invoice between Eskom and ENS? They seem to be a very prominent feature on that. And then I just wanted to follow up on
the Equin oil matter. That matter is in court, right? And yet you are penalizing them. What happens when if the court finds otherwise on the matters or finds adversely to yourselves? And then the final question is, on your last slide in the conclusion, you indicate that the reconciliation of National Treasury registers and ESCOM registers is ongoing. What is the timeline of that, and when do you envisage on completing that particular work? So just those three things, and then we'll be good to go.
Thank you, Chair. If Mel can deal with the ENS and the Econ Oil, and James on the Econ. Thank
you. Sure. Thank you, Caleb. Chair, to you. I'm just going to confirm what the total contract value for this specific instruction as related to ENS. I think it's around 6 million, but I'll get back to you shortly.
I'm looking for the entirety of your financial relationship with the how much are you paying? I'm just quite interested in
Thank you, Chair Limited. Chair, in terms of Econ Oil, I beg your pardon, Chair?
I was saying you can proceed.
Okay, great. I'll revert regarding the total value spend for ENS. On Econ Oil, I think we need to be careful. So there's various components of legal matters that are underway. The matters that are currently before the court and the matter that's currently in arbitration are all civil matters. We have definitive findings of irregular conduct, illegal conduct as related to Econ Oil. And on that basis, Eskom has suspended Econ Oil from its supplier database. So that's something that's separate to the current proceedings that's before court. I think it's important that we actually make that distinction. Chair, thank you. I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, it does, but I mean the caution us here, we ask the question as difficult as they are. The caution is noted, but substantively the issue remains, and that's not been responded to. Right, the next responses.
Honourable Member, it's Gentry Sancta, the Acting CPO, so I want to answer on the matter of reconciling registers. Perhaps it's incorrectly said as ongoing. What we should be saying is every quarter we reconcile our registers with National Treasury so that what is published by National Treasury is actually what we present ourselves to SCOPA. So it's ongoing in the sense that we do it every quarter, but it's not an action that's overdue, Chair, because we do it every quarter. Thank you.
I'm reminded of a friend of mine who, when he speaks to his little one, he always says, use your words. And so I think in preparing presentations, write what you mean and mean what you say. Use your words. Don't leave things to speculation. All right, okay. Colleagues, are there any other matters that you would like to raise, colleagues? Are you all fine? All right. I'm not sure if the Deputy Minister ended up joining. So Stombi, can you? All right, let me, you see, that's the problem. Minister's not here, GM's not here, CEO is not here. And then it's as if we're being pedantic and or being petty when these things are raised.
I just don't think it creates for a healthy working relationship for Eskom and DPE to position themselves on collision course with this committee in the manner in which things are being done. And I think that our sense of understanding as a committee on the very complicated and complex matters at hand, to the extent to which we understand that we may not always be together all the time, is being taken for a ride. I don't think it's acceptable. And quite frankly, I think it flies in the face of accountability, responsibility, and oversight. At best, it is a clear indication of institutions who are helping to undermine Parliament. To what extent you want to take it and what you want to achieve, that is up to you. You are at liberty to do what you want to do. But what we are also at liberty to do is that we will drag you here through subpoenas if we have to. So take yourselves as warned. Because quite frankly, this situation is untenable. We're already grappling with the difficulties of having to interact with you virtually, which makes the meetings very, very difficult. And even then, on that basis, there's no compliance. Suffice it to say, a treatment of disdain. And it's not the first time we have raised these issues, but it's as if we are speaking to a wall. It is not right. And if you see us as an irritation, well, take it from me. We are a necessary irritation until you get things right. And the only way to get us off your backs is if you do the right things and you do the correct things. In the absence of that, we are a permanent feature of your daily lived reality. If you want Scopa out of a job, and this is to you, everybody else, do the right things. Then there's no findings and then there's no reason for us to meet. But until that point, embedded in your operational DNA, that from time to time you will have to come before Parliament and this committee. So like I'm saying, this is the last time I am issuing this caution. Minister's not here, the deputy minister's not here, the CEO is not here. Right, and the hand of Honourable Mawoto is up.
No, Chair, you covered me. I was going to speak about that because now we assist with officials who, when we ask questions, they are grappling. Sometimes we'd even wonder, are they not receiving SMSs to say, don't answer that one? You know, it's very complex when the accountable people that have been employed to be accountable, they are not here. It's really wrong. And I'm glad that, Chair, you summed up the meeting on that note. But I fully support what you just said. It's very wrong. And they must present themselves to SCOPA even when SCOPA requires a meeting. Thank you, Chair.
All right, thank you very much. So I'm going to hand over to the Chair of the Board for concluding remarks on his part, and then we'll just one or two announcements, and then we'll call it a day. Prof?
Yeah, thank you, Honorable Members and the Chair. I think we have obviously listened, and there are a number of useful, I think, comments that have come out of this meeting today, and we'll take note of that and improve from the lessons that we have learned. I really do think that honorable members, we should try and be honest with each other, that you know, we should all follow protocols and be professional in the way we do things, because sometimes we follow these protocols and things get hidden in the tracks and so forth, and they don't reach each other. But we should just remember that that's the nature of this. And I really think that as a committee, an oversight committee, these lines of communication should really be simplified so that we can all be accountable for the mistakes we make, rather than be accountable in a very indirect manner. I try to respect protocol, and I think this committee obviously does its job as it's supposed to do. It's responsible, and we will adhere to that. However, I do believe that there are problems in the communications problem, in the communication sphere. As you have heard from the DG of National Treasury, they are not completely fully staffed. And I suspect that it may be happening in other departments too that we have to deal with. And at the end of the day, we take the consequences of this sort of things. But be that as it may, I do agree that as long as we don't do things the right way, you will be on our back, and hopefully you won't break our back before we are able to carry you and be correct and do things the right way as you have requested. I think I'm grateful that we have had this meeting, and there are lots of lessons that have happened. There are two issues that I also want to mention. I think the whole procurement system of our country, whether it's overseen by National Treasury or by the state-owned enterprises, I think it requires to be revamped in a manner that everybody understands it. It seems like everybody is free to be in the zoo to do as they wish in terms of procurement. And this has been the biggest problem that I'm observing and I'm seeing all the time. Project management is another one that I think has been mentioned in this meeting. Another one is consequence management. I think one of the simplest things to do consequence management is to tell somebody that you are going to discipline them. And as soon as you do that, they think of an exit door because the law allows that. But be that as it may, I always value, I think, the inputs that you bring here. Sometimes they're painful and difficult, but nevertheless, there are lessons that we need to learn in order that we can develop as we try to transform and improve what happens at ESCOM. I thank you all.
All right, and thank you very much, Chairperson. Yeah, I take what you are saying on the communication part, but I think I must hasten to say that this problem only arises when we're dealing with the BPE and ESCOM. And I think that is what shines the spotlight on it. Otherwise, we don't have it. Right, so let me thank you, Chairperson, and the board members who are present, and say that, of course, our interaction with ESCOM is a work in progress, given the gravity of the situation. And until we are satisfied that things have turned the corner, we will be present. I just want to Therefore, thank you, Chair, and the board, and the executives who are present this morning, and hope that there will be an improvement in the financial management, contract management, and consequence management realities of Eskom, so that Eskom is functional, not just functional in terms of providing electricity, which is its core mandate, which at this point in time leaves very little to be desired. But be that as it may, functionality and effectiveness at every management level, consistent with the law. And that is our only expectation, the right thing is being done. So I hope that suffices. I was tempted to say happy birthday to Eskom, but there's very little to be happy about. On that note, colleagues, tomorrow we've got the SABC a hearing. I'm on the SABC, and you'll be receiving correspondence later on today on the SSA matters for your consideration in terms of the roadmap which we had agreed upon on the other matters that you will be we'll still have to be dealing with. So there will be further communication on the Eskom visit matter of the committee. So on that note, colleagues, let me take this opportunity to thank you and wish you well, and say we'll meet tomorrow at 9:30 to deal with the SABC, and the House is sitting this afternoon at 1400 hours. So without any further ado, the meeting stands adjourned. Thank you.